Welcome to Sidetracked, your unofficial agency of record. I'm Emily.
And I'm Shane, and we help run Trek, a tech-driven creative services agency based in Rockford, Illinois. Trek is a full-service marketing agency, which means we do it all, and we've been around since 1995, which means we've seen it all.
In season one of Sidetracked, we'll cover everything from AI and digital advertising to branding best practices and how to stand out with print marketing.
We believe that problems are identified by the curious and solved by the courageous.
Which is why we always start with a question. All right. On this episode, we don't have just one big question. We have a lot of questions. And here to ask us these questions is our producer slash Trek's senior motion designer, Nick Grobe.
Hi, Nick.
Hey, how's it going, you guys?
Good. Awesome.
Welcome to the other side of the microphone. You guys didn't know it, but Nick's been here for every episode. He's been recording alongside us, but now you can hear him too.
Yeah, happy to be here. Happy to be on this side of things.
Yay. So Nick's been collecting questions all season long, and I guess we can just fire away. We don't know what we're in for here.
But I'm so nervous. What are we going to be asked?
All right, Nick, what questions you got for us?
Okay, let me dip into the mailbag here. Let's see. Question numero uno. How long have you worked at Trek?
Oh,
official answer.
Years. I forget. It'll be 8 years soon, in a couple of months. For me.
11 years working at Trek. We've said this before though, but Shane and I both are kids of original founders. So we've been here around Trek
our whole lives. Just kidding. 30 years. It's our 30th year. In October, Trek will be 30. And we've both been around for all 30 years, but we are older than Trek.
So I can actually remember when I first started at Trek, I can remember both of you guys on separate occasions, like coming in, like when you were still in school and stuff.
Oh my gosh, you knew high school us.
And sitting at the tables, you know, and doing whatever it was, you know.
Doing our homework. Yeah. I used to love doing my homework after school in that old Trek building.
Downtown. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So official answer, 11 years for me. Unofficial answer, 30. That feels so dramatic.
All right. Question number two. What is your actual title at Trek and what does your average day look like?
All right. I'll go first. My actual title is Managing Director Content Strategy, and my day, the average day at Trek for me is dipping in and out of many Google Docs. My team works on website copy, social media copy, video scripts, blog posts, email copy, marketing automations, like automated email campaigns. So I am constantly reading and writing copy and I love it. I am a writer, at heart. So this is how I love to spend my days. I also am in and out of Zoom meetings all day because Emily and I are both remote. So we're constantly Zooming with our colleagues in the main office.
Okay. My title is Managing Director of Client Services. So my day is a lot of meetings with both our people in the office, like Shane said, but also with clients and a lot of strategizing. So looking at campaigns that we're running or things that we need to plan for, how to best use the budget that we have, the people that we have, and then working with, you know, our kind of project manager slash operations specialist, Rebecca, to make sure that our teams have the right workloads. That's an all-day thing every day as well. So long story short, I'm in a lot of meetings, taking a lot of notes, And then I'm slacking people all the time.
Oh, yes. We should say we're slacking constantly and we're constantly in Asana. We live in Google, Asana, and Slack all day long.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's the current state of things. So if I could put a twist on that question, how do you think your days have changed? Like, cause I mean, you've been doing this for close to a decade, each of you, I guess, right? So how do you think that's changed over the years or maybe even in the last few years?
Oh my gosh. My days are wildly different. When I started, I was a copywriter, and for a little bit, I was the only copywriter, and that was intense. and it became clear that we needed more people on my team. And then I started building out a team and added another copywriter and someone to focus on social media and someone to focus on HubSpot administration. Now I have this whole team. So it's less, getting in and like doing the work and more helping other people to do the work and sort of directing the work and thinking about the work at a more strategic level. It's totally different. But I love both. I also love getting in there and doing the work, which I still do every day.
I started at Trek doing like new business and writing a lot of proposals and doing a lot of like meetings and prospecting and sales type things. And then transitioned into more like account management. So I've always been really close to the client. And my role has mostly just evolved from being in the meetings and listening, taking notes, helping to make sure the team had what they need to do the work, and has evolved a little bit more into I'm responsible for what happens in and after the meeting. You know, like it's not just I'm attending the meeting and then can kind of like assist or help, but like kind of leading the charge. That happened, you know, I guess in the last 5 years or so. And then today it's less of that. It's kind of going back to where I started, where I'm in meetings, and I'm supporting others, but now it's not because I'm learning. It's because I'm like helping my team learn too. So it's kind of maybe like I went from one pendulum swing to the other, and now maybe I'm somewhere in between of like my days. I am solely responsible for meetings and outcomes for like 50%, and then the other half are like supporting and advising, but I'm not ultimately the one that has to do the work, like you're saying, Shane.
Yeah. So obviously, that's how your careers have kind of progressed a little bit, or your roles have sort of changed over the years. Like, did you feel since you were little coming in and seeing your parents at Trek and doing what they were going to do? Like, was it always kind of a plan where you were like, yeah, one day I'm going to grow up and that's going to be me, you know? Or was it just, hey, you know, Shane was into writing and then, you know, eventually she thought that it might be a good fit into like marketing, took a marketing angle. And, you know, Emily's always been, you know, a people person and likes dealing with clients and solving problems. And so, you know, this was kind of a natural fit. Like, what was the impetus, I guess, that got you in the door, you know?
Oh my gosh. For me, no.
Yeah. I think we both actively resisted, did yes. not plan. Shane resisted longer than I did, obviously, since I've been here a little bit longer, but we both did not plan for this or grow up being like, yes, I want to do that. Because in all reality, being a business owner, being an entrepreneur is hard work, you know? So like, it's not all roses and rainbows. And when you see that up close with your parents, you see the good and the bad, and sometimes the bad sticks out more in your memory. So I think both of us just having that front row seat, maybe we're a little bit reluctant. But then as we grew older, tried our own things in different ways, realized that like, this is actually a pretty special place that they've built. Mm-hmm. And, wanted to be a part of it.
Yeah, part of my teenage rebellion was moving far away and doing something that was like the opposite of what my mom had done, you know? And it did take a long time to come back around and realize that she had built this really cool thing and that I actually did want to be a part of it. But before coming back to Trek, I worked for a while at a healthcare technology startup here in New York. And I did operations there, and then I eventually moved into HR and did HR for a couple of years. And I got a lot of really great experience before coming back to Trek that I needed. Like, I couldn't have gone right into working at Trek. I didn't know anything. I needed to get out there and learn how different kinds of companies worked. And I worked a few other places as well. I think that was really useful to go out into the world before coming back. And Emily, you did too. You worked in recruiting.
Yeah. I lived in Chicago for a bit. But ultimately it was like, I didn't pick it because it was my passion. It was just kind of like, who's somebody that will hire me after college, you know?
Oh,
I want to be in Chicago.
Same.
So like, what can I do in Chicago?
Yeah. I graduated from grad school in 2009, like right into the Great Recession. And it was like, wherever you can get a job, no matter how much it pays, no matter what you're doing. But I think that was actually, I ended up working some like really interesting jobs in those years and learning a lot. But yes, it was certainly not, I was certainly not following my passion either.
Not like now.
All right. So now to, maybe get to some like business marketing related questions here. Let me reach back into the mailbag here and pull out a toughie for you. What is a realistic timeline for trying a new marketing strategy? And second part, how long should I give it before trying something else?
Ooh. Okay. It kind of depends what you're doing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We have a few rules of thumb with something like paid search ads or paid social ads. You need to let it run for at least a month before starting to make tweaks because you need to gather enough data to figure out, is it working? Is it not? If you have a really, really high budget, maybe it could be less than that. But for most of our clients, we'll say, okay, let it run for the first month. We're going to gather intel during that time and then we'll make tweaks. For something like content marketing, where you're creating a whole content strategy, you're writing blog posts for a website and trying to optimize the website for search and there's, you know, behind the scenes, there's a lot of like interlinking between different blog posts to sort of like build these interconnected webs of content and ideas. That's something that takes a long time. We always tell clients that content marketing is a long game. Right now, we were just looking at some of our clients who, we've been doing content for a while and we're starting to see results, from content that we published in 2021 and 2022. So when I say a long game, I mean a really long game sometimes. But it builds on itself. You know, it starts to get exponential at a certain point. So it might take a little while to see results from the first maybe year. Maybe you have some initial like low hanging fruit results, but the real results you're going to see in each year after that, as you keep going.
It also depends on your sales cycle. So like, how are you measuring success of this campaign? So if you're measuring it on ROI, which, you know, most of the time you are, because you need to be able to tie sales to your marketing. Not every single piece of the marketing is going to tie back to ROI because you need people to be aware of you first. That's like, they have to know that you exist. you know, and that has to happen first. That's kind of like the long game stuff you're talking about, Shane. It's like you have to address the website, social, and like set yourself up with a foundation that can long-term build for you. And that's like mostly awareness style content. You're not going to see an ROI on that immediately, or maybe those kinds of things build up to things that do prove ROI, but you couldn't get to those effective campaigns with ads or with content marketing, like email strategies, if they come back and you don't have a website, you know, like you still need that foundational thing. So as you're looking at the campaign on the whole, trying to measure ROI, you probably are looking for conversions. How do I get the word out so that they're aware of me and then they convert? If you are somebody who has conversion time of like, okay, they hear about you, but then they need, like there's a 6 month lead time. Maybe they place an order and then you can't fulfill it for another 6 months. So then like all in all, when you actually make the sale on your books or whatever, it might be a year. Or maybe people just need a lot of information to make a decision. It takes 6 months. Or if you're selling a product and they make a decision instantly, then you have your number right there immediately. You know, there's a lot of different factors in the cycle of your buyer and knowing their timeframes, their average timeframes. We've had campaigns before for clients that are, we launch, we think are a failure, and then a year or a year and a half goes by and they have a sale that's like one of the biggest sales they've ever had that came from a campaign that we did that length of time. And if you would have just written the whole thing off, which I think we did at the time because we thought, oh, that didn't work. But like ultimately it did, you know? So it's a tough question to ask, like, what's the average time frame you can expect? Because who's your buyer? How long do they need to make a decision? That's probably your answer. You need to give them time. And then second, to your point, Shane, like depends on which part you're testing, you know?
Yeah, it is a good reason though, too, with any marketing strategy, have a mix of channels going. Because you're going to have some channels where it is a longer game. It takes a while, but they're important. They're really foundational. And then you're going to have some channels where you're going to get a quicker return, like paid search, like ads, you know, ads as opposed to marketing, but they can play together.
So we're saying more than a week.
Sorry to say, usually more than a week.
Usually more than a month too.
Yes.
Okay, next question. How do you find out where your ICP, woo-woo, gets their info? I need help choosing channels where my target customers hang out. I'm going to quickly mention I don't know what ICP is. Because I only know one ICP, and I'm pretty sure you're not referring not to that.
Clown posse. Okay, ICP. This is a term we throw around in strategy discussions a lot. It stands for ideal customer profile. You might also hear something like buyer persona. They're a little bit different. But yes, your ideal customer profile, it's basically like if we could choose like the perfect customer tomorrow. Like we're going to try to attract somebody who works at this type of company in this industry with this revenue and this many employees. And the person we're talking to has this job title. That's your ICP.
Mm-hmm. To answer the question, the first thing that you could do is just ask the people that you know that are your ideal target audience, your ideal customers. So going to those people you have good relationships already with and just say, hey, how do you stay up on your news? How did you find me? You know, how did you get my information?
What industry magazines are you reading? Like what blogs do you read? What emails do you subscribe to? Mm-hmm. Yes.
Do you attend can set webinars?
Up like, oh yeah. Where are you signing up for webinars? If you can get even like 15 minutes with each of your like top customers and ask some of those questions. That's incredibly helpful. We call these places where ICPs hang out watering holes. It's where they get their information. So that's what you're looking for. And the reason you're looking for it is you want your information to show up there where they are already going to get their information. So part of this might also be like, what social media channels do they use? Do they hang out on LinkedIn? Are they on Instagram? But it is also like, industry publications, what trade shows do you go to? That's an important one. And if you don't have anyone that you can ask, we just do like a lot of research. It used to be kind of a lot of Googling. It can be like dipping into, you know, forums, checking them out. Like, are these the right people? More recently, this is a great use case for AI. Like a ChatGPT can very quickly answer this question. And you have to, you know, double check the info you get, but you would if you were Googling around anyways. And then maybe you take what you find and take it back to one of your top customers and say, hey, does this look right? Am I missing anything? Yeah, I don't know. What else would you say, Emily? Oh, podcasts. You might have to listen to a lot of these podcasts, you know, check them out. Like, are they reputable?
Yeah. And it is like a delicate balance of where you can market that they are, like not every place that they are is a fit for you to market yourself. Like maybe your goals don't align with what that channel does or, their voice or whatever. But, the only other thing I'd say is the media kits online. So a lot of times people will, publications, especially in their media, packages will say who their audience is specifically, like, oh, this is made up of, you know, our audience is 80% production related, people and at, manufacturing plants in the Midwest, you know, like a lot of times they have that targeting kind of laid out for you. So you get a general idea. But I don't think that just with research, you get the same boots on the ground insider knowledge that you need to be truly relevant at some mm-hmm. point. I think you have to have a conversation or be verified by somebody to be really ingrained and relevant the way you need to be.
Agreed.
I think this next one is great and actually is probably something on the minds of a lot of people. If you don't have a marketing team or a big marketing budget, what are the top three things you can do for maximum impact?
What a good question.
Do you have your answer?
Okay. I think I have my number one.
Okay. You share your number one. I'll think about my number one.
Okay. I think my number one would be focus on your website. Just make sure you have a really good website. And when I say really good, what I mean by that is it clearly communicates who you are and what you do. It gives people a way to contact you that is easy. And ideally it has like a little bit more information as well for people who are not quite sure yet. Like they found your website, but they're not sure if they're ready to contact you. So that consideration stage we were talking about. That would be my number one. And then I think my number two would be like, if you had not a lot of budget, like this does not really take budget. There are ways to do it that take budget, but doesn't really take a lot of budget. It will take a little bit of your time. Get testimonials from your current customers. They don't have to be fancy. Like we do a lot of fancy testimonials for our clients, like big, you know, video productions where like we're going out and doing like a full day shoot at their customer's facility and getting like all this, you know, video footage so we can make, you know, reels for social and longer like commercial type videos. You don't have to do that. Like email your customer and be like, hey, love working with you. Would you mind like giving me a testimonial for my website. For my dollar, two sentences from a customer that loves you is going to be more effective than almost anything else you can do on your own without an agency or without a big marketing team. What would you say, Emily?
I was going to say website as well. And the reason is you don't have to be everywhere all the time, especially when you don't have the resources or the people, you know, the human resources or the capital resources to do that. But you want to be somewhere and do it well and do it with authenticity. So investing in your website, yes, that's number one. And then number two to me is testimonials is one way of doing this, but building your I'm trying to think about like what the platform it would take is, I guess, higher level than like the actual tactic or like execution of this is just the be who you are and then show it. So take pictures, take video, and know your position, like in the market, in your business, as the world of, you know, whatever it is, whatever industry it is, who are you in that industry? And who are you in the world? And then be that authentically and show that from a first hand perspective, wherever you choose to be. So there are, as a trend that I'm seeing is that there is a lot of AI generated images and whole companies popping up that are offering services that are just like totally driven by AI and there's no personality. And you can tell, like, they don't have any images on their site that are them, you know, or they're all stock, or they're all just very canned feeling or very similar to everybody else in the industry because there's an industry standard and no one wants to rise above that. But if you know who you are in the market and how you need to stand out or just how you need to just be you, focus on doing that really well and then the second part is showing them, because if you have that content or those visuals, like that's a big stumbling block we always have. And I think that's a good way to differentiate yourself. It's like actually showing your work.
Because yes, show your work.
People are so guarded about showing things. They just want to talk about it, but people need to see it now, especially.
Yeah, even if it's just like starting an Instagram profile and posting like one video every day from like, hey, here we are, you know, we're in the shop. This is so-and-so. They're working on this cool project. Like, take a minute. It doesn't have to be fancy. In fact, don't make it fancy. Like just, yes, be authentic about it.
No, even better if it's not fancy, you know, because more believable.
Yeah. When it comes to the website, the thing I would add is just like make sure it's really professional and yes. You don't have to hire a professional to make it seem professional necessarily, because there are a lot of inexpensive website platforms out there right now that have themes. And yes, your theme is probably going to look like every other theme out there. Like that's fine though. If you don't have the budget for it, just choose one of those nice looking themes that was actually designed by a designer and go with it. We do see a lot of, you know, kind of new clients that come to us asking for help that have websites that would put somebody off because they're old, they're outdated, they are broken. And if somebody gets to your website and they're not seeing anything else from you except a broken website, like buttons that don't work and typos in it, like they're not going to want to work with you. They're not going to trust you. So just make it professional.
Yeah. And that's the point of like what I was saying. Don't spread yourself too thin that like the things you put out there are poor quality, but you're everywhere. You're on all the social, you're sending out emails, you have a website, you know, and you're doing blogs and you're doing whatever, like all the things, but they're all really poorly done. Then like, you're just better off just cut like most of it and just stick to the basics, stick to the things you know you can commit time to.
Mm-hmm.
All right, here's a couple of more personal questions. What podcasts do you listen to? What podcasts do you listen to?
Well, Shane introduced me to Reply All by Gimlet Media, and I loved that.
R.I.P.
R.I.P., yeah. And then PJ Vogt, who did that podcast, started a different one called Search Engine, which Shane also told me about, which is like investigative journalism on just questions that you would put into a search engine, random burning questions on your mind. There's never really a theme. So I like that one for like an easy listening, or if I'm looking at the questions and I'm like, oh, I have wondered that, like, I want to know. I'll listen to that one. And the other podcast that I really like that I listen to every Tuesday is the Artificial Intelligence Show. And that's by the Marketing AI Institute, and they're former HubSpot partners. They were, I guess, the first HubSpot partner. So he was a former agency owner. He has a similar mindset, but, that's not the framework that they talk about AI in the call or on the podcast. It's kind of an open-ended discussion, but, I really enjoy their perspective. And then I do sometimes listen to true crime-y things, but it's more investigative and not like crime as in murder, more like scams, like that kind of crime. Like people got had, like how did it happen?
I love and have been listening to you for, oh my gosh, probably almost 10 years, a podcast called Happier in Hollywood. And the two co-hosts are showrunners in Hollywood, and they basically just like talk about what that's like. So they are co-writers who became co-showrunners. They are partners in their job, and like for their job, that actually means that like they each take half a salary, which I find so interesting because like in Hollywood, like the studio could choose to hire one showrunner and they're getting like two for the price of one in this case. Like Hollywood's so wild. So I've learned a lot about just like how Hollywood works, which is interesting to me. I would never like want to be part of it, but I find it fascinating. And also they talk a lot about like the sort of like craft of writing too, just like writing scripts. And I don't write scripts. I write fiction usually. But I just think it's interesting. And they're fun. They're two fun friends.
Aww. You've told me about that one.
It's a good one. Yeah. And I listen to Search Engine.
Nice. Regarding our segment, this season, Mike's at the Bar. You haven't liked any of the cocktails. I don't know if that's entirely true. You haven't liked any of the cocktails. What is your beverage of choice? Again, I don't think that's entirely true. I think Emily was a little easier on him than you, Shane, but,
in our defense, some of those cocktails were disgusting. I am like a cocktail fan, and I actually have a very open mind. Like I will try most cocktails. Some of those cocktails were gross. I think the problem was the recipe book that we were working from. I'm not going to blame Mike. Mike did a great job. I think we have one left in this season, so it's probably going to be at the end of this episode, but there was one that I liked. Beverage of choice. Okay, I have two go-to beverages of choice. If I'm having a non-alcoholic beverage, I love a Foni Negroni. It is from a company called St. Agrestis. This is not an ad. I just love them so much. I order these by the case. It is a non-alcoholic Negroni. And if I'm having an alcoholic drink, I have a drink that I make that I don't think has a name, or maybe somebody can write in to me and say like, you didn't invent this. It totally has a name. But what it is,
it's a rum and coke.
I know. It's a rum and coke. No, it's equal parts bourbon, or I'll do a rye, St. Agrestis Inferno Bitter, which same company as the Foni Negroni, but they make this, I would call it like a Campari equivalent. So if I can't get that, I'll do Campari or Maletti. And Amaro Nonino. And it's delicious. I have it stirred over ice. It's my favorite cocktail. It doesn't have a name. It's sort of like a, I would say it's like a cousin of the paper plane.
This is all going way over my head. I don't know any of the words that you just said, but nodding my head like, okay, cool. Sounds good.
Okay, what's your beverage of choice, Emily?
If it is a non-alcoholic drink that, like we're out somewhere and they have non-alcoholic beverages, but like cocktail style, I really like a strawberry mule, obviously without the alcohol, just the ginger beer basically, and like fresh strawberries. And then I think they put like some lemon juice or something in there too.
Delicious.
Yeah.
Refreshing. Really
good. Yeah, very refreshing. Mm. But like daily, I think the thing I'd probably drink the most of other than water, because I am a very big water snob, actually, is iced coffee. If I had to pick between a hot and an iced, I pretty much, 8 times out of 10, I'm going to pick iced coffee. And I would, like, usually if it's a place that has, like, house-made simple syrup or house-made flavors, I like flavor. I like not flavored coffee girl.
Yeah. I am not a flavored coffee girl.
We're opposites in beverages.
I know. It's so true. So do you, when you say iced coffee, do you mean like a cold brew iced coffee, or are you okay with if a restaurant will just make coffee and then put it in the fridge?
No.
Okay.
I'm not okay
with that. It has to be a cold brew.
Yeah. Either a cold brew or like a nice latte. Or yes, okay. Something like that. Yeah.
Okay. Well, when you come visit me in New York next, I'm going to take you to get my favorite cold brew in the world, which is La Colombe. Ooh. It is the most delicious cold brew, and it's so strong that it gives me heart palpitations.
They have that bottled at like Whole Foods and stuff, but it's not the like...
No, you got to get it. They have it on draft in the cafe. They have it on draft, and it's wonderful. Mm.
Okay. Yeah. Let's do it.
Those were fun questions. Was that the last one?
Yes, it was.
Well, I've loved season one. I don't know about
you all. Season one has been great. Season one's been so fun. I'm excited for season two.
Yeah. We're already planning. We're already thinking about it. Going to experiment a little bit, maybe with some format, maybe with obviously more excellent topics.
Yes, we'll be talking about things like video production, CRM optimization, how to make your website perform really well. So yes, please join us for season two.
Yeah, and thanks for being with us on this journey of our first Trek podcast.
And Nick Grove, thank you for being our MC today. I'm so glad you got to come out from behind the, what do you call it? Behind the...
Out of the booth.
Yeah, out of the booth. Yes, I'm so glad you got to come out of the booth.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was good. I obviously we talk, in between, on some things that get edited out, but yeah, to be able to kind of participate and, hear, kind of firsthand and report what the feedback and the questions are that people have had. It was a lot of fun.
And stick around for the end of the episode and you'll get to hear some bloopers from season one.
Oh my gosh. So many bloopers. So many bloopers.
So many bloopers. There's some gems.
All right. Talk to y'all later.
See you next season.
Fun fact, Sidetracked is the name of the bar inside Trek, where it's not uncommon to find a copywriter and a designer brainstorming a new project, an account manager hosting a client for happy hour, and our creative director and head mixologist, Mike Wilson, mixing up something fun.
In this season of Sidetracked, Mike's making his way through a 1970s cocktail recipe book, and we volunteered to be his taste testers.
Mike's at the bar, and he made us a drink.
What'd you make us, Mike?
I made you guys Negronis. Mm-hmm. So we have, it has Campari, and we used gin, or you could use vodka, and then sweet red vermouth.
Mmm, I'm excited. I'm glad we're having a Negroni right now. All right. It's beautiful also. Beautiful shade of red. Okay, let's try it.
The NA version is not as lovely of a color. It is a little bit like sewer water. But I'm optimistic that the taste is not
Nope. That's not a true Negroni.
That's
sorry.
Okay. Let's give it a whirl.
All right. That's good. Nice and bitter.
Yeah, not good. I hate bitter. Oh. We have opposite tastes in drinks.
We do, it turns out.
Yeah, I don't like Negronis.
I'm really enjoying this. I love it.
Well.
5 out of 5, Mike.
Wow.
Good job.
Do you even give it a number?
Yeah, 0.
Okay, good.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks for joining us. If you like this episode of Sidetracked, rate and review it, share it with a friend, subscribe, all of the above. Learn more about us at Trek.com.
Sidetracked is a production of Trek. Our producer is Nick Grove. Our production manager is Sean Burke. Our content editor is Nick Ostick, and our design lead is Mike Wilson. Testing, testing.
Are you calling me manly?
Sets you up for future success with all the privacy laws, GDUSA, or not GDUSA, that's something else. What is the acronym? Too many acronyms.
As much gravy as you can possibly get onto a plate, I think is the best way to go.
That's the right answer. Thank you.
Yes. If there's a pool of gravy that happens to have turkey around it, that's kind of what you want.
And to help us answer that question, we have art director Chris Brown with us today, not to be confused with the other Chris Brown, R&B artist. Chris Brown is his own.
And if you guys could just like shake it out and get a little loosey-goosey.
In this season of Sidetracked, Mike's making his way through a 1977 publication called The 2-in-1 International Recipe Card Collection for mixed drinks. What a mouthful. And hors d'oeuvres. Okay, we're going to have to redo that.
And then we can have like music before the main segment that's like, the big question.
Right. I don't want to always be the hater with hot takes and a bad taste in my mouth. So, you know, I got to be.
You hate everything from email to Art Deco.
You can definitely feel free to cut this.
It looks pretty solid. I think we're good.
Nothing more sturdy than a
pile of napkins. Yeah. Bloopers.